And what a pleasure and privilege it is to start this program with the great mayor of Detroit. He will go down in the history books as one of, if not the best mayors this city has ever had at a time when it really needed his talent and skills. It's still hard for me to think of this as the exit interview. And in a sense, yes, it's the exit interview as he's in his last month as mayor of the city of Detroit, but he's not going anywhere. And if it works out his way, he will be the next governor of the great state of Michigan and take the skills he has used for years to turn Detroit around and turn our state around. With that thought in mind, I welcome the mayor of the city of Detroit, Mayor Mike Duggan.
Good to be with you, Paul W.
Always nice to have you with us. And you joked when you came in, you felt funny not carrying anything because the last time I saw you carried the key to the city, and I can never thank you enough for that. You have done so many things. There was a nice article in the Free Press under Michigan Business. Duggan reflects on big wins, and it goes on and lists so many of the great and big and important things that you got done. Is there anything left off that list that you're proud of that we didn't see in that story?
You know, so many people did so much for the last 12 years, and this city always had enormous potential. We just had to stop this black versus white, city versus suburban fighting with each other and pull together. And once we did and the talents of this city got turned loose, you've seen 12 years of progress, and I'm confident with the next mayor, you're going to see several more years of progress.
Did you know that Mary Sheffield, our next mayor, was about to get married and did?
Sonia and I had the mayor-elect and her fiancé over to the Manoogian for dinner 2 weeks ago. So, yes, I was aware. But she's entitled to a private life.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
and it was private.
Everybody else.
It was kept secret. I mean, nobody knew, as far as I know, other than you and your wife.
But as people get to know Ricky, her new husband, Detroiters are going to love him. Just a down-to-earth, normal, non-political person, I think the average Detroiter is going to bond with the new first gentleman.
Well, that's excellent. That's certainly good news. Is there anything, since 2014, it's a completely different city, Mr. Mayor. We've hit bottom. Then Mayor Dave Bing said flatly at one point, he's quoted in one of these many articles, we are far from the bottom now. But is there anything that's gnawing at you that you did not get done that you wish you could have and you're going to help Mary do that?
You know, I think the biggest thing is the schools. I think Dr. Vitti and the school board have taken it the right direction. But if you look at the 7,000 population growth last year that led Michigan and was one of the top 25 cities in the country in growth, very few families with school-aged children. And it isn't just Detroit. The 60% of third graders across the state of Michigan aren't reading at grade level. I just hit a point where I realized the mayor can't do anything about that. Only the governor can do something about that. I think I'm going to go become the best partner that the public schools ever had.
Well, when you consider how many people since we lost a million people since 1957, and that is a lot of years of decline, and it is going to take decades of growth to get all of that back, but you couldn't do it as mayor. How are you going to do it as governor?
Well, I'm spending a lot of time, and in January 1, I'll be in every corner of the state full-time, but people have not focused on this. The test scores, the third grade reading scores in this state have been declining for 25 years.
Boy.
When we passed Proposal A in 1994 and we raised the sales tax from 4 cents to 6 cents, everybody was promised that extra 2 cents was going to K-12 education. And over the years, the Republicans and Democrats in Lansing have been siphoning that money out. And this year, they took a $1.3 billion out of the school aid fund to put into other parts of the state. While our test scores are continuing to decline, I said, there's got to be some accountability at this point. And about the only thing they agree on is to spend money they don't have. So I'm going to see if I can get up there, put the money back into the schools, put some accountabilities in these classrooms, and let the teachers teach.
You know, I've always said, Mayor Mike Duggan with us on the exit interview, he is about to go before a very large crowd here at the Detroit Economic Club, might be the largest I've seen. You're going to be saying goodbye, but you're not really going away, as I like to keep mentioning. In fact, Mike Parsons, my producer, said, what do you think, Paul? Will he be harder to get on now or not as hard? You've always been pretty easy to get on for us. You've never not been available to us.
So I'm going to be a lot easier for the outstate stations for sure.
Right. You need to do that.
Wherever you guys are. But January, Sonia and I have been driving the state, but it's been very difficult with basically 40 hours plus a week as mayor, 40 hours a week campaigning. But starting January 1, I'm going to get out to the parts of the state that don't know me. The Tri-County area, I'm winning every poll that you see. But I get outstate, and they don't get up in the morning in Cadillac and say, gee, I wonder what's going on in Detroit. Let me follow it. I'm going to have to go up and tell the story and give people a chance to get to know me.
Yeah. Well, the good news is this radio station has a signal that covers quite a bit of Michigan, more so than most radio stations.
Okay, then you won't have any trouble getting me on.
No, but you do need to go out there. You do need to be seen. Because I'm always confused. Like, for example, the Mitchell report the other day, it didn't even have you in there because you're not running in the primary, so that's not what he's doing. He's doing the primary. And we're going to watch the Republicans and Democrats bash each other based on the fact that they're Republicans and Democrats. And I've said it before. I don't know if I've said it in front of you. It is disgusting to me that the Democrat Party, of which you were a major force, loved you to pieces until you said you weren't a Democrat anymore. And then all of a sudden, they've been attacking you every day. That's ridiculous, and it shows that they care more about the party than the people they're supposed to be representing.
Well, now I'm watching them tear each other apart. You see, 2 days ago, where Jocelyn Benson attacked Gretchen Whitmer on these data centers, saying when she gets to be governor, people will make the decisions, not corporations. And the Democrats have beat up Gretchen Whitmer for going up and working with Trump to land 5,000 jobs at Selfridge Air Force Base. We're watching this Democratic Party turn on itself. And with the point where Gretchen Whitmer isn't progressive enough to be a Democrat, this party's going to have a tough time winning elections.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And what you said a moment ago, instead of blacks and whites not getting along, you've gotten these people, all of these people, to get along. And most importantly, you got the city council to get along. We had not lived with a city council that seemed to get along with the mayor in years.
Well, you remember, the year I was running for election, one of the best-rated shows on Detroit TV was the nightly reruns of city council meetings. I mean, Detroiters went home and turned them on to watch the outburst, but it was a national embarrassment. And this is why Mary Sheffield has become so enormously popular, is the professionalism of city council. City council helped me solve problems. They didn't spend time attacking the mayor.
I don't know whose article this is. I can't tell from my paperwork, but I'm going to use their words. As Duggan ends his tenure as Detroit mayor, he leaves behind a legacy of the impact of inclusive, pragmatic leadership. His leadership offers a blueprint for cities facing similar challenges. Focus on foundational issues, foster collaboration, and never lose sight of the community's needs. That really is a great quote that fits you to a T, Mr. Mayor, and I want to thank you on behalf of all the people listening who don't get a chance to say thank you that would like to. We really appreciate what you have done for the city of Detroit. It's incredible.
Thank you, Paul W. It means a lot coming from you.
Well, I mean it. I wouldn't try to kiss up to you or BS you. Heck, I already have the key to the city. And now we're going to wish you the best of luck in this next effort, which is going to be a tough one, but you already know what you have to do. Come January, you and Dr. Sonia are going to head out and get yourself as well known out there as you are here in Detroit.
I'm going to give people a choice. If politics as usual is working for you, you got a Republican and Democratic choice. And if you think Michigan's not going the right direction because of it, I'm going to give you a third choice, and we'll see how people feel.
Mayor Mike Duggan, who is now about to go in and face really the notables of our city, in what is being called here at the Detroit Economic Club, the exit interview. Thank you. There's a few people we can clap. There's a few people here that are left in that before they go inside. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. We continue in focus on WJR. Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation always. She is the president, chief executive officer of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Tricia Keith is here with us. Always nice to see you. You know I'm on your side. I always have the pin affordability matters, because I agree with you, not 100%, but 1,000%. And I've been a part of the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan family for a number of years, and thank you for keeping me as a part of the family. With all of that in mind, and I do thank you for taking time to be here, and I want to get you back in there before the mayor has his speech, which is coming up. I know this is an especially busy time of year for Blue Cross. What's happening?
Well, good afternoon, Paul W. It's great to be here, and thanks for the opportunity. And your pin looks sensational. You do
it goes
a great
with every,
job of wearing
it. Goes it goes with everything I wear.
Affordability does matter, and that's what we're talking about. But right now, as we go into year end, what we're really working on very hard is everything that is changing right now in healthcare and in healthcare insurance. And what we know is that what is happening in the marketplace, particularly with the Affordable Care Act and the issues around the advanced premium tax credits for the individual business, there are 500,000 people in Michigan who buy individual health insurance, and we have about 125 of those 1,000 people. And we cover 5 million people, but that's a really important segment. And unfortunately, a number of carriers in Michigan have pulled out of the market, sending 160,000 people without insurance options. And remember, we exist to cover people. We believe in access. And so we're working. We've tripled our volume in our call centers to be able to help those people find insurance and find a product that they can have before the year end. And so, you know, as our slogan says, we're ready to help. We want to cover people. And so that's what we're working on right now. We thank our employees who are doing that.
Well, good for you. And everybody's all in to make sure that that happens. And that's a very good thing. You have a tremendous team. I can't believe this, though. Tricia Keith is about to wrap up her first year. I can't believe it's been a year. It went by very quickly.
It's gone very quickly, and we've spent the year talking about affordability and raising the discussion about how we create affordability for our members, because affordability matters. And what we've been talking about is how we can work with the entire health system, the providers, the hospitals, pharmaceutical industries, and others in order to improve the cost of the system, because that's what, insurance is standing in between those people paying the premium and the cost of the system. We've talked a lot about how last year we paid out $1.04 for every dollar that we took in premium.
Wow.
Obviously, that's not a sustainable model, but we want to cover people, and we want to be there when people need us. And so that's what we've been working on. And next year, we're going to continue beating that drum and talking about solutions.
Well, the 15% increase in drugs, prescription drugs, it's crazy, way above what inflation was at the time, and that's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable, and the trend is not sustainable either. And we want to make sure that we're doing a lot of things on the front end to keep people healthier, to use preventative medicine as well. We've had some success, actually, in pharmacy this year in doing a number of things, switching to biosimilars from name brands and other things. But we have a lot of other regulatory ideas that we think could help solve some of the affordability crisis, particularly as it relates to pharma.
Well, I just love the fact that you, as the president and chief executive officer of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, take this overall view. You realize it's not just one area that needs some fixing. It's all areas that need to work together to make it affordable, because affordability does matter, especially in healthcare. What would you say, Tricia Keith, would be some of your top priorities for Blue Cross heading into 2026?
Well, I think it's continuing to talk about affordability and what we can do. We've spent 2025 talking about the components of the system. But, you know, we recognize we are all serving the same people, and it's going to work better. It's going to create affordability if we can work together. We were so delighted earlier this year when we reached a landmark agreement with Corewell Health, where we're able to pay for outcomes versus just volume and procedures. And so continuing to push that and working with the hospitals and continuing to talk about some of the other solutions that are there for the different components of the system is going to be the continued focus, because that's what we need to do, and that's what our members are asking us to do.
You know, as Michiganders or Michiganians, depending on what you want to say, I think that 130-year-old dairy farm in northern Michigan from which you come reaches out and speaks to us as Michiganders and Michiganians. You're one of us. and you understand these problems and you're attacking them. And in all of your senior leadership positions in nearly 20 years working with the company, you really worked hard to get to where you are today. And it's very important because healthcare is indeed, as you've put it, at a turning point with immense opportunities, but also significant challenges. And I do believe you are the person to handle all of this.
Well, I had a great mentor in Dan Lepp to give me a lot of these opportunities. I like to say I'm farm-raised and city-rooted and deeply committed to Michigan, as is our company, and we are going to be able to solve the affordability questions that we have.
We're very, very, very fortunate to go from a great guy like Dan Lepp to a great guy like you, Tricia. Thank you for everything you're doing. Any way we can be of help at any time, you know you can call upon us personally or through the radio station, whatever you need.
Thank you for your partnership and friendship.
Oh, it's important to us. And now you still have a minute and a half to get in there for the speech from the, I almost said the governor. I mean the mayor. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. Thanks for all your support.
Thank you so much and happy holidays.
Happy holiday to you. Tricia Keith in her holiday greens, nicely dressed, president, chief executive officer, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, right here in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. And, of course, we did that interview with the mayor because now he is doing his speech in the other room. And if you missed our interview, you can get it on the podcast. You know, you can stream us always live at WJR.com from anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, and you can podcast at your convenience.
And, Paul, you can actually watch. We video streamed it on our Facebook and YouTube page as well. So.
How did you video stream it?
With a selfie stick, some bubble gum, and my cell phone.
Wow, yeah. Cool. And where is that? Where would they find that?
The WJR Facebook and YouTube pages.
Okay. Did you do that just with the mayor?
Just
with Tricia as well?
Or? Yeah, with the mayor. And then everyone else will be up for podcasts not long after the show ends.
Okay, very good. Jared Halpern is here, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, the Supreme Court. Hearing arguments over the firing of the FTC commissioner by President Trump. Boy, they've been called into action a lot. And President Trump says he may intervene in the Netflix Warner Brothers deal. It's as if he just doesn't have enough to do. I do see, too, though, that he is proposing $12 billion in aid, an aid package for farmers hit hard by his trade war with China. And we have a fair amount of farmers around here, so maybe that's good news for them. But anyway, Jared Halpern, always a pleasure. Nice to have you on board here. Fill us in on what you know, Jared.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that Netflix Warner Brothers deal goes through, because I think Skydance, the parent company of Paramount CBS, has put together another bid as well. So there could be a lot of wrangling, and we'll see. Obviously, any deal of those streaming services would require – some form of government approval, because they are going to be antitrust, anti-competitive sorts of investigations. But it may be instructive in kind of getting a sense of where this administration is on some of those regulations. You've seen Democratic administrations tend to be more skeptical of those deals. Republican administrations in the past have been a little bit more receptive. We'll see where President Trump comes down the line on some of these deals, because there were a lot of these types of communications, mergers underway in the works, and they're all going to need approval from either the FTC, the Trade Commission, in some cases, the FTC, the Federal Communications Commission. So we'll see kind of where perhaps this shakes out once the deal is done. But notable that President Trump, listen, who is certainly aware of the media and has lived a big part of his life in the media, not surprising he would weigh in on something like that.
You know, you brought it up, and I read about it this morning, Jared Halpern talking about the Netflix Warner Brothers deal, and all of a sudden now Paramount has come through with what we call, haven't heard this term in a while, hostile takeover. So I guess, is that considered good news for the stockholders, because it means that the price might go up even higher?
I don't know enough about it. I know that there seems to be a bidding war underway, and it's really about, like, how it shows how lucrative platforms have become, right? Paramount Plus, HBO streaming platform, obviously Netflix, and the ability to kind of merge all of them under one umbrella certainly seems like it's something that folks are willing to spend an awful lot of money on. But again, it is going to raise questions about trust, competitiveness, and things like that. So, yeah, you're right. I had not seen that term in a long time either. A hostile bid is how it was described. So,
yeah, hostile we'll takeover.
Yeah, I guess that's not the nice one. It's the hostile one. I don't know.
No, it's when they haven't agreed to do a sale, which is, we're going to say, Netflix and Warner Brothers came to a handshake deal.
Yeah, they came to an agreement, yeah.
And Paramount said, well, not so fast. We
yeah.
want a piece of this action. And so by them horning in without anybody's invitation, that's why it becomes a hostile takeover. And
it does, yeah.
It's just crazy. You know, no one cares.
I guess if you got the money, nobody has to invite you to the party. But
no, that's right. Well, that's right. It appears.
But again, I think what from a federal sort of Trump standpoint, from the administration standpoint, what I'm going to be looking at is what these, you know, because this isn't the only deal out there. What do these mergers and acquisitions look like? What kind of temperature is the regulatory process right now? We've heard a lot about media consolidation. What does that look like? What does that mean? Is this an FCC now that has a majority of Republican seats on it that is more receptive to that? Or is it going to be kind of discerning about, you know, how big is too big when you talk about media ownership?
The Rebecca Kelly Slaughter story, to most of us, is relatively meaningless. She is the FTC commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
What makes these always so fascinating to me, and we've got Jared Halpern, who stays on top of this stuff, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor. This is somebody the president put in this position in his last term. So this is his person. And
yeah.
now he's trying to, or has, fired his own person to put somebody else in there, I guess.
It speaks to the question of executive power. And that's why and this is not in a vacuum. There have been a lot of commissions that have been undone by President Trump, a lot of firings, right, of a lot of officials who believe that the president can't unilaterally fire them. This is the latest case now to reach the Supreme Court, and it goes to the question of these independent agencies, which are arms of the executive branch, but are have oversight and were created by acts of Congress. They are supposed to be independent. Can the president, who has the power to nominate folks for that board, rescind those and fire them? That's what the question is, because, again, Congress has said, no, no, no. There are rules and laws that govern how to remove people. The president isn't following those. The administration's argument is that that law is unconstitutional because the president ultimately has authority over the executive branch. And that's the question now in front of the Supreme Court.
I'll end with this quote from somebody I don't know, Professor Brian Fitzpatrick at Vanderbilt University Law School. Quote, "It's very likely the Supreme Court is going to say that in order for the president to be able to do his job, to take care that the laws are faithfully mm-hmm. executed, he has to have control of the people helping him execute those laws." So that professor is making it sound like the Supreme Court is going to find in favor of President Donald Trump, which
there are a lot of court watchers who believe that that is the likely outcome. I think what they're looking for is what kind of constraints, if any, the Supreme Court imposes on a president for the hiring and firing of these types of officials.
Well put. Jared Halpern, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire. Thank you so much, Jared. We appreciate your help. Have a great week.
Thank you.
We continue on WJR. I don't hear myself very well. Is that because the mic is so low? We had a little technical difficulty, but we were able to get our clothes back on. Okay, we're very happy to welcome a person I haven't talked to in forever, and I used to talk to her a lot when she was the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau. I'm talking about the one and only Melanie Ducanel. Melanie, good afternoon. Welcome to Focus.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. And I said to Mike, our producer, I said,
right.
I haven't talked to Melanie forever. And he goes, Well, that's because she doesn't have the job she used to. She's got a new job, and she wants us to know about it. So tell me about your new job.
So the new job is the United Community Family Services. It is an organization that was started in 1961 by 20 refugee and immigrant women with a mission to help families rebuild their lives with dignity and hope. How's that? But basically what we do is we really work with refugees and immigrants to try to assimilate them into our U.S. culture and communities. Because sometimes when they get here, they don't have the means to support themselves. So we're here to help them do that.
This is wild. This is great news. Melanie Ducanel, who's the former president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau, now named CEO of the United Community Family Services, Chaldean American Ladies of Charity, that founded in 1961. And today, operating from its own facility, home to administrative offices, training space, and the Share House, which is a large basic needs center and food pantry, you're bringing a wealth of leadership experience and a deep passion for community empowerment to this new role. So congratulations to you on that. How long were you with the Better Business Bureau?
Just over 14 years.
I was going to say it was a very long time.
Yeah.
Very long
time. This is really near and dear to my heart, to take those that don't have much in terms of opportunities and give them the support and joy that we all value and search for. But if we can share that with a little bit more opportunity and compassion, I think our world will be a heck of a lot better place.
Well, it's wonderful after 14 years to find another area, a niche that really turns you on, really makes you say,
exactly,
this is what I really want to do. And
exactly,
everyone, I really think everyone should do what they want to do. That's where real happiness comes in. So good for you. And,
yeah,
and tell me more about what you're doing now.
So in the sense of all the events that we do, the first one that's coming up that's probably the most timely is our Wonderland program. This year we're going to serve more than 400 children to receive toys and gifts. So the families include newly arrived immigrant and or refugee families, as well as longstanding community members that may be facing hardships like job loss, medical challenges, or unexpected disruptions.
Well, we've heard from the UCFS CALC board of directors, and they say they are welcoming, Melanie, your vision and your expertise as the organization continues to expand programs that guide, support, and empower individuals to achieve self-sufficiency with dignity and hope. And my goodness gracious, right off the bat, you say you're taking care of, in terms of the children, 400 children. So this is a huge organization affecting a huge number of people. Tell us more about that.
So that's coming up December 22nd from 10 to 3 at our offices in Troy. So one of the biggest contributors to it is our huge donor base. And though it is a little bit smaller because of the times are a little rougher than we'd all like to express, but they have been huge supporters of this organization to make these children's Christmases joyful.
But
so
it doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Exactly. And we're going to have Santa Claus. We're going to have elves. We're going to have crafts and activities and refreshments. But we're also, because times are a little bit tough for some, we're also looking for additional donors. So if anybody is interested in making a child's Christmas a little happier, we're always looking for donations. And you can go to ucfamilieservices.org or contact us at 248-528-0130.
Right, it's ucfamilieservices.org, and give me that phone number again slowly so I can write
sure.
it down.
248.
Yes.
528.
Okay.
0130.
That's 248-528-0130. And this year, as we said, more than 400 children will receive toys and gifts, but there's more need than even that. And this is your
right.
Wonderland Day that you celebrate.
Right.
At your
right.
offices on Austin Drive in Troy. And before we run out of time, we're certainly concerned that the food pantry doesn't run bare and that the share house, the warehouse of clothes and household items, including furniture, continues. So that's why we want people to answer the call and join you and help out best they can.
Absolutely. And the more the merrier, because the need does not seem to go away. It seems to just grow, especially in these days.
Isn't that the truth? Well, congratulations. Nice to find
Thank you,
you in this new position and that you love. This is
I
just
do.
Great news.
I do. So, but in the meantime, we'll keep you up to date on all the upcoming events because we have quite a few coming your way.
Please do. After 14 years of doing a great job as president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau, Melanie Ducanel, now the CEO of United Community Family Services, Chaldean American Ladies of Charity, ucfamilieservices.org, or call them at 248-528-0130. As we continue in focus, Paul W. Smith here, special broadcast at the Detroit Economic Club. Stay with us. And thank you so much to the president of DFCU Financial, our sponsor, Ryan Goldberg. We appreciate that. Special thanks to Steve Gregorian, the man who runs this wonderful event, the Detroit Economic Club. We're at the Soundboard, which is a fabulous place to have an event, by the way. The Soundboard at Motor City Casino for Mayor Duggan. And as you heard Mr. Announcer say, it's called the exit interview because this is his final month as mayor of the great city of Detroit. He's done a tremendous job. He'd like to be our next governor, so we'll see what happens. By the way, the next mayor, Mary Sheffield, got married over the weekend to Ricky, from what I understand. And the mayor and Dr. Sonia apparently had them over at the Manoogian a couple weeks ago, and they kind of revealed that they were getting ready to get married. Did you hear that?
Yeah, they probably had to get it done before the end of the year because work's about to get busy for Mayor Sheffield.
It is.
Ricky Jackson Jr. is her husband's name.
Do you know him? Or do you
looked it up.
Do we know Ricky Jackson Jr.? What's he do?
Let's see. His LinkedIn page says he's a program manager for Project Play Southeast Michigan, which provides youth in the region with access to safe play and quality sports programs.
Nice.
So it sounds kind of along the lines of PAL.
Yeah.
PAL adjacent.
It does sound like that, doesn't it? Well, that's good. I like anybody and everybody who helps kids. Well, just like Melanie we were just talking to.
Right.
You know? All right, we're into hour number two, and we haven't had a chance to say this. We've been running since we hit the ground here. And this is a note from Ann Thomas, our WJR Detroit Program Director / Cumulus Media. It says, hi, everyone. Congratulations are in order for Laura Hessen Sutherland and her husband Devin and their son Jacob. They welcome Jacob's new brother, Andrew Richard Sutherland. At 11:52 a.m., Andrew is 7 pounds, 10 ounces, and 20 inches long. Please join me in wishing the Sutherlands a lifetime of happiness with their growing family. Now,
all right, congratulations.
This was from Wednesday. Last Wednesday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving,
Wednesday. Oh, thank you for that, sir. Thank you. God bless you. What was that? Thanksgiving baby?
No, I think I got my time lengths mixed up. It all blurs together this time of year.
Well, there are babies flying everywhere. but anyway, congratulations to Laura and to Devin and their son, Jacob.
Yeah, big brother.
We've been holding on to that and wanted to get it out there and mention it, so now we have. So that's all good news. Our family is growing at WJR, you know?
Yeah. It's great.
It's a very good thing. A couple of things. What is Notre Dame? They're upset. What happened? They got snubbed from the CFP.
Yeah. So the college football playoff, Notre Dame did not get in. They're a two-loss team. Alabama got in over them, and they were in the top 12, but they weren't one of the conference leaders. So Notre Dame. Notre Dame got snubbed from the college football playoff, and they declined to play in any bowl.
Well, it sounds almost like they said, you didn't vote my way, so I'm taking my football and going home.
Which it does, but then there's a whole bunch of other schools who are declining bowl bids.
I wonder why. I mean, don't they get a lot of money when they go to a bowl? It costs them a lot of money to get a whole team there and everything else.
Well, the two that followed suit after Notre Dame was Kansas State and Iowa State, and they both are being fined $500,000 by the Big 12 Conference for not playing in a bowl.
Because it brings money to all the schools.
Yeah. But I know Iowa State, their coach is leaving for Penn State. Kansas State said that they're trying to turn the page to next season. I mean, the whole calendar is just a mess. I mean, kids can hit the transfer portal. Coaches can leave before a bowl game.
Which is wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but I got to say this. This is not in the story the way it should be. That coach who was leaving LSU.
Lane Kiffin.
Yeah. He offered to stay, and the school said no. That's the part that's never said. They make it look like, oh, he's leaving before they even play in there. Dave, you follow this stuff. You probably even bet on this one. Didn't he offer to stay, and they said thanks but no thanks?
Yeah, it was kind of an empty gesture, though, wasn't it?
No, he offered to stay, and that's never in the story. They always say, oh, he's leaving him at the time of the worst time ever. He offered to stay and coach.
Yeah.
And they said no. So the whole story is out. That's all I care about.
Well, but going back, because he was the offensive coordinator for Alabama a couple of years ago when they were playing in the national championship game, and Nick Saban told them just to leave because I guess what he was doing leading up to the national championship game is he was recruiting for his new job. So Ole Miss was worried about that.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I think it was just lip service. I think Lane Kiffin, he's a slippery fella.
Here's a very bizarre thing. And Dave is agreeing with you 100%. He's a slippery fella is the part that got Dave's attention. Do you know, we talked about how much we like the green bean casserole for Thanksgiving. I love it. I really do like it.
Yeah. Oh. And I said you could have.
Somebody doesn't like it.
I'm with you, Kyle.
Kyle Emmy doesn't like it.
I told.
Dave doesn't like it? You don't like it?
No.
Oh, I'm the only one here.
No, Danielle likes it too.
Okay.
I said you and Danielle can have my green bean casserole.
All right. But go figure this. That was for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Why would they make December 3rd? I've been carrying this around too. I'm just getting rid of the stuff I've been carrying around. See what it says? National Green Bean Casserole Day, December 3rd. Why would it be after Thanksgiving?
Yeah. I
don't think I've ever seen the green casserole except at Thanksgiving.
No, it's Thanksgiving. It should be like the Tuesday before Thanksgiving because Wednesday's Blackout Wednesday. So give green bean casserole its own day, and it should be before Thanksgiving.
It says here green beans are in white, pink, and purple. Green bean flowers can come in the shades of purple, white, and pink. Unlike the crazy internet trend that saw teens eating inedible Tide Pods. Oh, come on. Idiots.
You know what? I would eat green bean casserole before Tide Pods. I'll give you that.
You can keep your job then. very nutritious. Green beans are extremely nutritious. They are packed with protein, fiber, vitamins, and minerals. A bit toxic when raw. If you eat raw green beans, you'll most likely be consuming toxins that are concentrated and stored in the plant. That's from growing them.
Yeah.
Right? That's sad. After tomatoes and peppers, green beans are the most popular plant grown in people's gardens as they're easy to grow.
Yeah, I saw someone said, why pay for your own produce when you can wait 18 months and get it for a slight discount by growing it yourself?
Zoran, whatever the hell.
Mamdani,
because a lot of people say Mamdami.
I think I do say that.
I think you just did.
Yeah.
And the Louvre. You like the way I say that? The Louvre.
The Louvre?
Yeah, the Louvre. Make the list of most mispronounced words of 2025.
Exhibit A right here.
Babbel and the captioning group released a list of the most mispronounced words in the U.S., and that included Mamdani, the Louvre, and acetaminophen. The list reflects the people and topics that Americans are talking about throughout the year. See, I've been carrying these things around. We just didn't have it. And this is very important stuff.
Well, I'm glad you finally got it out. Yeah, I'm just going to call them Zoran, and I'm just going to call it Tylenol.
Yeah, I think that's that works. What does this mean, Michigan planning for fewer player opt-outs this year in Citrus Bowl?
My guess is they're expecting more of their starters to play because, you know, a lot of times with these bowl games – if they have draft considerations, if it's not a playoff game, they're going to sit out. You know, a lot of time it's a completely different team with the transfer portal. So maybe Michigan will have most of its team intact instead of just a bunch of new transfers and people who aren't going to make the draft. We'll see. In the Cheez-Its Citrus Bowl.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Which Cheez-Its and
Citrus Bowl.
Yeah, Cheez-Its and citrus don't really go together.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And who's our friend up there, up north? What's that place? He retired, but now his kids run the place. You see all the billboards when you're going up north? What is that? It's an unbelievable shopping experience. It's huge.
Not Birch Run.
No. They have kayaks and they have everything. It's an amazing place. But he also has, he took us across the street when we were up there. He has a warehouse full of Cheez-Its. And I think he says he has the most Cheez-Its in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, what the heck's the name of that place?
It's not Bavitno.
You see these billboards on the drive up north? That's sad. I can't remember. I haven't talked to him in a long while.
It's not Bronner's, is it?
No.
What do they sell?
They sell Cheez-Its, and they sell everything in bulk. They have what are those bow and arrows, the ones that are fancy? The
crossbows?
They have crossbows. They have chairs for outside, those wooden chairs.
Cabela's?
No.
Gander Mountain.
Costco.
What?
Costco.
Not Costco.
This is going to bother me.
You're hitting all the places I love.
Yeah.
But no, that's not it. I'll find it. It's in my phone. I'm going to go get that coffee they brought over.
Yeah.
For
hey,
me.
Even if we're not on the air, let me know because now it's bothering me.
I will let you know. It's a great place. And the kids, I think, have taken it over. All right. 1:15, and I probably have to read this. So I will. Is that right? I am reading this.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Had dinner the other night at Ottavia.
Yeah.
Ottavia. It should be just Ottavia, but it's not just Ottavia. It's like Ottava.
Yeah.
Ottavia.
Ottavia.
Yeah. In Corktown. Fabulous dinner with Dan Pelko, Crystal Klemperd Pelko, and Mary Burney. I can't forget to mention our WJR account executive because she picked up the tab, which is excellent. I love that. And we had a great dinner with our good friends from Family Heating, Cooling, and Air Conditioning. And the holidays are for spending time with family and friends in the comfort of your home, but is your home ready for all those fun-filled festivities? Now, whether you're concerned about the quality of air you and your guests will breathe, winter power outages, or the status of your existing furnace, why is the theme music continuously playing here? My friends at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical are there for you. They offer quality products and repair services for an honest price. They also offer free, no-pressure estimates for new heating equipment. Call Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical today and schedule an appointment to have your furnace cleaned and checked to ensure your furnace continues to keep you warm during the holidays. Remember, none of their people work on commission, so they'll never try to sell you something you don't need or want. And now, Family is the official heating, cooling, and electrical partner of the Detroit Red Wings. Call the Family. They're still the Family. Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Or visit familyheating.com to learn how they can help your family. Remember, it's familyheating.com. They'll have all the locations and phone numbers. And remember this, too. Family is not just the name of their company. It truly is the way they do business. We continue in Focus with Paul W. at WJR. Well, I have to tell you, thank you to my Kim who saved the day. I was trying to think of, and Mike was looking for, and none of them knew, it's Northwoods Wholesale Outlet. And I remember they had billboards everywhere when you were going up north, and it seems to me early on one of their billboards had Bigfoot on the billboard. Is that the way you remember it, Kyle Emmy? Do you remember the Bigfoot? Yeah. And Marty Hornacek, who ran the company forever, I think he sold it to his family members. I think Michael Weiss. There's a couple of different people, but they're still there, I'm sure. And it's a incredible experience, Northwoods Wholesale Outlet. All right, very happy to welcome Congressman Tom Barrett. Wait a minute. Where am I? Is that right? Oh, okay. So we're just running that late. I see. Because, yeah, I'm at 118. Are we that late? Oh, how did that happen? Were you guys talking too much? Is that what it was? Congressman Barrett, Republican from the 7th District, God bless you. Nice to have you on with us. And apparently you've done some pretty nice work for some people. Can you tell us about it?
Oh, thank you, Paul W. Appreciate it. And Merry Christmas, of course. And thank you for having me on your program today. We actually had worked very diligently. There was a man in my district who was picked up by ICE. He came here as a refugee. He's a Hmong refugee, of course, the ethnic group that many of whom came to the United States and many settled in Michigan after the fall of Saigon at the end of the Vietnam War. And Lou's father had helped Americans in the Vietnam War. And then he was actually born at a refugee camp in Thailand, immigrated to the United States when he was an infant, and when he was a teenager was involved in a bungled home invasion attempt that was not successful.
Wait a minute.
Sure.
He was one of the perpetrators of a home invasion?
Yes. So
want to say, Congressman, with all due respect, I sense that you're saying he wasn't successful. It was botched.
Right.
But that doesn't forgive him from what he tried to do.
No, it does not. And he ended up going to jail. He did 10 months in jail, served time for that offense. This is 30 or so years ago.
Oh.
And subsequently had his record expunged and then was going forward with life, has 6 kids, married to an American, and all of his children are American citizens as well. And he was picked up by ICE officials because of that dormant criminal conviction from, you know, about 30 years ago.
Even though they took it off of his record?
Exactly. And that's sort of what then got me involved in the case, trying to work to have him released back home to his family. This took a number of months to get done, and advocacy to get up there. I mean, they were ready to deport him back to Laos, which is the family where his or the country where his parents were born, and he had never been to. I mean, he was born actually as a refugee in Thailand, but that was his, home citizenship. And so we got involved, and as I expressed to the administration as I was working through this and to ICE officials is, you know, I think we need to be very firm and also fair in how we enforce immigration law. I just fully believe that Liu Yang, the gentleman from my district, number one, he was never an illegal immigrant. He came here as a refugee, and he still continues to have status in that way. He's not an illegal immigrant, and he does not present a threat to our community. And really,
Congressman, I got to tell you, I support ICE. I can't stand the way people are criticizing them, throwing things at them, doing. I think that they are doing the work they've been asked to do by Congress. But I must tell you, they appear to be reckless, and they make mistakes like this seemingly all the time. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't even necessarily think it was a procedural mistake in the case of Liu Yang. It I think, was one that needed a element of human intervention because the system itself would suggest that he would be deported. To me, it necessitated an intervention to have that reviewed at a higher level to ultimately, you know, have sensible people look at this and say, all right, this man does not present a threat to our community. You know, he was a teenager at the time that this happened. He's not a threat. He served time and moved on and, you know, has done other successful things as a community leader. And he's not an illegal immigrant. I think in the broader aspect of ICE enforcement, to your point, there has been this tremendous backlash of activists confronting and attacking ICE people, you know, ICE officers in different communities. We need to do a forceful job and a firm job of removing people that are in the country illegally. And I stand behind that because it needs to be done. You can't have a country absorb 10 or 15 or some estimates as high as 18 or 20 million people that came through under the term of Joe Biden alone, let alone those that had immigrated here illegally in prior administrations, and not remove people that are in the country illegally. The country simply can't absorb that. We've seen that in a variety of different ways that have been present for us in the United States in countless communities. So that work needs to get done. It needs to be done in a ethical and forceful way at the same time. I just felt that this case was demonstrably different given the fact that Liu Yang was not an illegal immigrant to start with, and that he had certainly rehabilitated himself, absolutely no longer presented a threat to our community, and I felt deserved my involvement that way.
Well, I think that's fabulous. And I think, as explained by you, this is justice served. And anytime we hear of somebody stepping forward and doing something to make sure justice is realized, we salute you, Congressman. Congressman Tom thank Barrett, thank you for the story. Thanks for the good job you did and for caring.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Congressman Tom Barrett. He's a Republican from the 7th District. As we continue in Focus on WJR. And thanks to Steve Gregorian, the guy who runs all of this for the Detroit Economic Club, and here saw really fabulous at the soundboard at the Motor City Casino, and we had Mike Duggan on, Mayor Duggan on, to start the show, so you can find our podcast at WJR.com. You know, you can always stream us from anywhere in the world, and you can also podcast us from anywhere in the world at WJR.com. What a pleasure it is to welcome Hussein Berry here, Vice President Operations for Delta Airlines, our favorite airline, the official airline of the Paul W. Smith Show. It's nice to see you, Hussein. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa. We celebrate them all here.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to see you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me.
We are just getting ready to wrap up the 100th anniversary, and we've talked to Ed Bastian about this. We're going to get him on, I hope, before the end of the year. The 100th anniversary, and you're all set for the next 100 years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great year in Detroit and at Delta. It's been a really interesting year being our centennial year, and one of the things we're proud of is that we're the first airlines to be able to say that, obviously. But to take you back a little bit of history with Delta and Detroit, our journey started back in 1945 with Chicago and Southern Airlines, along with Northwest Airlines, starting service at the city airport. About 8 years later, CNS merged with Delta, moving over to the main terminal, and then fast forward to 2008 when Northwest and Delta got married, and we continue to make history today. Exciting, you know, Michigan is home to close to 5,000 Delta employees, supporting the economy, supporting our customers. Just great times here, and obviously growing operations, growing internationally. Right, you have Rome. That's year-round, Munich 7 days a week. You have Dublin, new service to the Detroit area. So some positive and exciting things in store for us.
Well, we have always loved Delta. We loved Northwest. And then when the two of you came together, it couldn't have been better. And we have worked over the years with Nick DeMarco, district sales manager, and a number of other people that have always helped us. Denise Daniel. I don't know if Denise is, she might have retired for all I know. But in the home office, it was Dale Lipman. And of course, so many people that made the transition from Northwest to Delta. It's been pretty spectacular. We really do consider Delta our hometown airline. Let's face it, because you guys are involved in everything that's good around here. The auto show itself, you sponsor for the ribbon cutting, the charity preview. You do all kinds of good things, Hussein, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity to serve the community, serve Michigan, Southeast Michigan, and all these events, like today's event here with the DEC, just to be a part of that. And many of the names, by the way, I am one of those people that transitioned from Northwest Airlines to Delta.
Good. Andrea Fisher Newman. Remember
Andrea,
that name?
Yeah. I just connected with her not too long ago. So many of those names you mentioned are still with us and doing great things with Delta.
Well, they are great people. So how are you preparing now for the upcoming holiday travel. We're glad we got through some of the problems that we were having, obviously. We still are short air traffic controllers. That's not something Delta can do anything about. But how are you preparing, Hussein, for this, what will be the maybe the biggest holiday travel season ever?
Yeah, we consider the holiday season as our Super Bowl. I mean, what are we doing to prepare? What are we not doing? I mean, obviously, in our business, we've learned over the years that irregularities are regular, and making sure that our customers are taken care of. Our holiday season brings a lot of volume, and not just any volume. It's inexperienced travelers and heavy coats and presents in their bags. And obviously, we got the snow to contend with. And so the team, the Delta team, just does an excellent job in planning and preparing for these events as this season comes. And obviously, for our customers, you know, they could use TSA PreCheck, touchless IDs in partnership with Delta. You know, obviously, our customers could experience one of our beautiful five Sky Clubs. You know, there's typically no lines, and they're beautiful clubs, and we continue to invest in those clubs. But some messaging for our customers, obviously, you know, nothing is perfect. As hard as we work to improve the seamless experience, you want to make sure that, you know, people come in a little early, check in using the Delta app, using the Backdrop app. And then one of my favorite things is this year, obviously, kindness goes a long way, and the travel season could be a little stressful, and we do a lot to remove that stress from our customers. But we're doing something called Centennial Cheer, and when we will be walking around and recognizing 100,000 customers with a small medallion card with a little gift in there, just, you know, if anybody's out there demonstrating a little bit of kindness, whether it's customer on employee, employee on customer, customer on customer, if somebody witnesses that, we'll be handing you a card. And
my wife, Kim, told me about this, and I have to tell you, this is true. Hussein, I did not trim my beard because I'm going to the airport and flying out tonight.
Okay.
And I want them to think that I'm Santa Claus and give me one of those centennial
you got it.
Little cards. That's why I didn't trim my beard. I want them to be confused and think I might be Santa.
That's a great strategy.
I'm doing everything I can. Listen, I have to tell you the truth, because that's what I try to do. And we're looking forward to a great 2026 with Delta Airlines. And from Ed Bastian all the way through, and you as a vice president of operations, Hussein Berry, I can tell you this. As a traveler, as a layperson, everybody's happy. And I've been around long enough back when it was Northwest or whatever, you know, when people weren't happy that worked for the airline. This is a long time ago, but I remember it. And if the employees are not happy, we, the customers, bear the brunt of that unhappiness. And I'm telling you that since you guys have been in charge in these last several years, you're taking good care of the employees, and we feel it and we sense it. They're happy. That makes us happy. And that's why Delta is the number one airline in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you for the kind words. We love to say that airplanes and technology and computers and mobile devices, all those things are accessible to every airline. What everybody's trying to figure out is what's so special about our employees, and that's who make us who we are. And they just do a wonderful job, and I couldn't be more proud of the Delta people.
Well, we're proud of you and Ed Bastian and all the team that continues to do a great job. Hussein Berry, Vice President Operations for Delta Airlines here in Detroit. And you've got a lot of time here with the degrees from Wayne State University and your Eastern Michigan. You're a Michigander in every way.
Yeah, very proud moment. I started pushing wheelchairs at the airport at the ripe age of 17 years old while I was in high school on the weekends.
Oh, boy.
Got out on the ramp and became a customer service agent, got into leadership, did a little bit of finance and operations. And just a product of Southeast Michigan, and a proud moment for me as well.
A true success story.
Yes,
good
sir.
For you.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy whatever you celebrate. We celebrate it with you.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and your entire audience.
Hussein Berry as we continue on WJR. Well, I'm happy to say our Channel 4 friends are here. They come in here after they take care of their business, and you had a great speech with Mayor Mike Duggan, the exit interview. So you can watch us these last few minutes, and that's you in Florida, too. We have a lot of snowbirds there in Florida at Local 4 Plus. it's like an app, like anything else, right? And so you can find us at Local 4 Plus anywhere, and we appreciate that. You can find Sam Clement working his behind off as executive director of the Detroit Auto Show and the Detroit Auto Dealers Association. In fact, he filled in on the JR Afternoon for Ryan Armani last week. A year ago, you filled in for me. And this is a busy time because I cannot believe we are like 6 weeks away from the auto show, Sam.
In a lot of ways, it feels like this last one just ended, but we're really excited. Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Well, talk to us. What should we look forward to? I understand you've got a very special keynote speaker for the Mobility Global Forum for the Detroit Auto Show.
Yeah, we announced last week that former Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg will be on the stage. He's going to have a conversation, not really a keynote, more of a sit-down conversation. Excited to announce the moderator for that here in a couple of days. But yeah, we've got a great lineup. I think to your first question, you know, what do we expect differently? I think it's just a more packed show floor. You know, we've got a lot of brands coming back. OEMs like Subaru, you know, to have them back on the show floor for the first time in a number of years is exciting. And I just think you'll see a more robust show floor than you've seen really since about the 2018-2019 show.
Well, during COVID, we lost people,
yeah.
and every show did.
For
some
sure.
Shows went out of business, but you guys kept the show alive, Rod Elberts, and now you, Sam Clement. And it would be embarrassing if the home of the automobile did not have its own auto show.
I would agree. Yeah, we use the tagline, there's only one Motor City. And as we were talking about on the show with Ryan last week, that if you're going to be the Motor City, you have to have a signature auto show. And I think we've done that this year in a lot of different ways. And a lot of support from the Detroit 3 and Toyota coming in early. And, you know, we've got a lot of interest, a lot of new partners this year. And I think that's going to make for a more dynamic show.
Detroit Auto Show excited to announce today that Ford Motor Company, General Motors, Stellantis, and Toyota are the first major global automakers to confirm participation for the January 2026 show here in the Motor City. Numerous other automakers and brands are, in fact, going to participate. You mentioned Subaru. All of this running January 14th through the 25th at Huntington Place. And it doesn't get any better than Huntington Place. It's really a wonderful place to do a show like this.
It is, and they've been great partners with us. You know, the show started, you know, started building for the show in February of this year, and had a lot of conversations with their staff there to make that an experience that's better for our attendees. And I think that we've achieved that. And you know, to have that relationship and to be such a huge part of the city, you know, we just heard from Mayor Duggan, and he joked he'd bring everyone to Detroit to see what it's all about. Except in February and January, I would encourage people to come down to Detroit. In January this year, but it's going to be a great time, and we're really excited.
Give us, if you can, lay it out. You don't have it in front of you. He's working with no notes, ladies and gentlemen. The 2026 Detroit Auto Show highlights, starting with the gallery fundraiser Tuesday, January 13th.
Yeah, if I need notes, I'm not doing my job very well. So January 13th, we're going to do a fundraiser at the gallery, which is, you know, our ultra-luxury vehicles. We've got some really special ones coming this year that people haven't really seen. But that event will be done to help raise money for Forgotten Harvest, which does a great job in the community providing meals at a time that obviously it's very needed. And then on January 14th and 15th, we have our Media and Industry Days, which is important for us because that's in our more traditional model where we have those days prior to Charity Preview. So that's a good move back, and we're excited for that. Part of that, as you mentioned earlier, is our Mobility Global Forum. We'll have more than 60 speakers, 30 different panels, some signature conversations as well. And then, of course, we'll have our Charity Preview on January 16th. We've raised $125 million for local children's charities. And then on the 17th through the 25th, we open to the public, and it should be a great 9 days.
Racing Day, presented by the Detroit Grand Prix, Tuesday, January 20th.
Correct.
The Future Leaders Program, Wednesday, Thursday, January 21st, 22nd. You got a lot going on, and it's very exciting. And you're going to hear from this guy, Sam Clement, a number of times between now and then. Sam, thanks so much.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Keep up the good work. You're doing a great job. Speaking of great jobs, coming up next, it's Ryan Armani and JR Afternoon. JR Afternoon and Ryan Armani. I have off tomorrow, but I'll be back with you, good Lord willing, on Wednesday. I hope you'll join us here. Thanks to the team, the whole group, Mike Parsons, Dave Rigger, Danielle Mason, Kyle Emmy, Rich Lisinski, Ann Thomas, Jeff Marcereau, Kim Smith. Regards, Paul W. Smith.